number three of Sports Talk begins with Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson. The program today is here in Pigeon Forge, and we're at Feasters on Teasters, which is in a remarkable location because there's so much that's going on. You have Feasters on Teasters, which is right here. This is they've got their signature Omaha steaks. They offer a special Thanksgiving Day entree, endless hand-carved smoked turkey. As long as you keep eating, they'll keep bringing it to your table. You also have right up at the other end of the block, the Wood Grill Buffet, the largest food selection in the Smokies. And so that's part of the complex. It's the Grand Smokies Themeplex, which also includes the Grand Smokies Resort with its popular indoor pool facilities, and you'll receive a 10% discount off your stay. And you have the Biblical Times Dinner Theater, which is also offering a 10% discount, and it's telling the Christmas Story Dinner Show, and you also have the new Great Spirit Retail Shop. So it's here at the Grand Smokies Resort. It's a thankfulness from their family to yours in Pigeon Forge between Parkway Lights 1 and 2. And, Jimmy, I know that every now and then with how things are shaking out these days, you can wind up in an opportunity where you just say, you know what, I owe the other guy big time. But all you have to do is get a whiff of the bread basket to know, Jimmy, at some point I owe you one, because they have the collection of Indian fried bread, yeast rolls, and sweet cornbread, which you then get to make another choice between whipped butter, whipped cinnamon honey butter, and fruit butter. So I am making out like a bandit because the Indian taco has just arrived. So I say at some point I owe you big time.
Oh, man, and I, you know, so much of this secret location bull. It's time to go to eat some great food.
That's Heck, right.
Maybe I'll show up in a disguise. Halloween wasn't that far back, was it?
No, not at all, but it's right between Parkway Lights 1 and 2 in Pigeon Forge, and we head to the Stanley Fencing and Gates hotline to say hello to Brent Hubbs of AllQuest.com as he joins us each week at this point in time. Brent, how are you?
Well, John, I'm now hungry, and I'm looking for Jimmy Himes, a Bobby Valentine disguise, so we can get him some food. But I'm doing well. I hope you guys are.
Yes, sir. And need to start first with non-sports stuff. Did Tracy have a good birthday?
She did. Thank you for asking. Yeah, she had a good birthday. Another lap around the sun, and start the next lap. So we'll be glad to move towards 2021, like most people will be. But yeah, she had a good day. So thanks for asking.
Wonderful. Brent's appearance brought to you by Diversified Enclosures and Screen. From design to installation, the team at Diversified has you covered. View their portfolio online at sunandscreen.com. So Tennessee wound up with the unexpected open date. Now it's a trip to Auburn. Brent, what are you expecting from the Volunteers going into this matchup against the Tigers?
John, I don't know. That's a great question. But, I mean, you know, Jeremy Pruitt has talked and has spoken for the last week or so about, you know, the confidence that this offense is gaining, and talking about confidence that young players are gaining. So the question becomes, are we going to see them? You know, does that confidence that he's talked about on the practice field turn into game reps for Harrison Bailey and some of those receivers or not? So, you know, I don't know. I know this: to win the game, Tennessee's going to have to score points because you don't win games in this league, and you don't win games in college football 13-10 anymore. It's a scoring game, and Tennessee's obviously got to score more points. So that's what I'm curious to see. Defensively, we all know that they've got some holes and weaknesses and things they need to work on. But the biggest thing for me is, can they find a way to score some, you know, and have some offensive production and put points on the scoreboard?
Brent, the one thing I wonder about is starting at quarterback. We've heard Jeremy Pruitt say he doesn't want to give Auburn an advantage by announcing the starter. But, gosh, I would be so tempted to start Harrison Bailey because I know Garantano can give me a spark off the bench. He's done it before. But if Garantano struggles, I'm not sure if I see a spark coming off the bench. How do you see that?
Well, I think the flip side of that is, you know, do you want to put Harrison Bailey in a situation where his first real significant playing time is on the road in a night atmosphere at Auburn? And how does Jared handle – if you make that move, how does Jared handle it this year? He handled it fine last year. We know that. Of course, some of that was he was playing with a broken hand as well. But does Jared handle it the same way he did a year ago? I don't know. I don't have any reason to believe he wouldn't, Jimmy. But every year is different. You know, he's a senior going down the stretch of his career. I don't know. I don't know how he would handle that now. That's something that I think Jeremy Pruitt and Jim Chaney have to look at. I just think where they're at right now, Jimmy, whether Harrison Bailey starts, whether he doesn't start, I think you have to build in a plan to get some series and, and get some snaps for him in a game. I just think you have to plan for that going in if he's not your starter. I think that's where Tennessee's at this point in the season. I think that's where Jared's at in his career. You kind of know what he is. You're not playing for an Eastern Division championship. You're playing a lot for the future and hope for the future. So, yeah, I think you'd like to see Harrison Bailey, and I think you'll see him. I don't know if he'll start him, but I do think you'll see him Saturday night.
The one thing that to me would be a big concern for Tennessee is that Auburn, after the first three games, they average 101 rushing yards a game. Each of the last three games, they've rushed for over 200, and Tank Bigsby's playing really well. Bo Nix is a mobile quarterback. I think that could potentially give Tennessee fits. Your thoughts?
Yeah, no doubt. And Bigsby's a really good player. Everybody in the country wanted him, and they kind of eased him into it. A lot of Auburn fans were screaming after that Kentucky game, where's he at? When are you going to play Tank? And it took him a couple games, really, to kind of get going with him. He didn't play a whole lot in that Georgia game and wasn't a big factor there. But once they gave him the ball, he's certainly taken off and is getting better each and every week. You mentioned Bo Nix's mobility. Because you have to worry about Bigsby, suddenly Nix's legs become much more effective than they were against Georgia, where they were not very effective at all. I think containing the edge, Jimmy, setting the edge and holding the edge is a huge key to this Tennessee defense's success on Saturday night. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And you got to try to force Bo Nix into some mistakes. They lost the South Carolina game. He threw three interceptions. He threw an interception, a big interception in the Georgia game. In the games that they've won, Bo Nix has not turned the ball over, and that's a big part of it. So you want to stop the run game and put it on Bo Nix's shoulders and hope he throws it to you and Tennessee can finally catch one for a while, because they've dropped more than they've caught, and that's a lot. They've dropped a lot of them this year that have been thrown their way.
Our guest, Brent Hubbs of allquest.com. If you have a question or comment for Brent, 656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free. For AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers, the toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. I guess, Brent, it came as absolutely no surprise that the dead period continues to be extended, and now we're looking, I guess, what, mid-April next year?
Yeah, crazy to think that coaches are going to go an entire calendar year without being able to be on the road. Prospects are going to go an entire calendar year without being able to take an official or an unofficial visit on campus and visit with coaches face-to-face. Really hard on this class that's going to sign in just a few weeks for them not to get an official visit or even an unofficial visit. Some of these guys are going to sign with schools, and they've never been on their campuses. They've never been face-to-face with a coach that they've committed to, other than a Zoom call. Probably will make for an interesting transfer portal over the next couple of years, as some kids say, you know, it's not, that place wasn't what I thought it would be. But I think kids are going to sign more uninformed than they probably have ever been about their, you know, the recruiting process and where they're going. And certainly from an evaluation standpoint for the coaches, it's a setback not to be able to go out and get a jump start and get working on those, you know, 22s and 23s in January, which is what that month of recruiting has become since the early signing period come into play.
And what was it? What was your reaction to the news in Columbia as the Gamecocks moved on from Will Muschamp? I think a lot of people, I know we were, under the impression that with all that was swirling about and, you know, lack of revenue, complete huge loss of revenue, that you might not see coaching changes. But were you caught off guard by the Gamecocks deciding to head in a different direction?
Yeah, a little bit, for a couple of reasons. One, because of what you said, the amount of money and the buyout that's going to be made there. And then I was under the impression that Ray Tanner was probably going to go first, and Ray Tanner would not be hiring the next football coach at South Carolina. I don't think Ray Tanner is necessarily hiring the next football coach, but it's going to be harder, in my opinion, to hire a coach if he doesn't know who his boss is going to be. And the feeling that everybody I talked to over that way is that, you know, Ray Tanner's not going to be there much longer. Either he's going to retire, or he's going to be asked to retire, or whatever. So I think that can make it a challenge to hiring a coach if a coach is not sure who his boss is going to be.
Yeah, fair point. Let's check in with Steve. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Steve.
Hey, fellas.
Hey.
Hey. Brent, you think it's unlikely that Tennessee wins as many as two more games this year?
Well, they won't be the favorite to win two. You know, they'll be the favorite to beat Vanderbilt. But,
right,
you know, right now, right now with where they are offensively, it's hard to see them scoring enough points to beat Florida or Texas A&M. And, you know, I don't know if they can score enough points to beat Auburn this weekend.
Right.
I think their two best chances on paper would be Auburn and Vanderbilt. But to do that, they're going to have to find some offense.
Right. Well, listen, I got to ask you, how many more do you think we will have commitments from in football, and who do you think it could be? I know I keep asking that question, but sometimes new names come up, so I just want to know.
Sure. Well, there's a young man, and I don't have his name with me, Steve. I'm sorry. We got a story up on him yesterday. We ran it yesterday. I'll grab his name for you here in a second. From Georgia Military, who's a rough edge guy that obviously Tennessee's looking for those kind of players, you know, would like to add one to the class. That's a new name that's popped up. There's a linebacker that's committed to Boston College that Tennessee has had conversations with. That's a new name that's popped up. They're continuing to evaluate offensive linemen, defensive linemen, particularly edge rushers. And I think they're continuing to look in the secondary at maybe a safety and a corner. Of course, we all know Nylon Green and how important he is and what Tennessee would like to do there. They would love to get that one. And then Tywan Malone, the young man from up in the Northeast who's a baseball player and football player. It looks like that's Tennessee Ole Miss right now. That's kind of the big part of the board. I think Tennessee's had some conversations with Amarius Mims. I think ultimately Mims will stick with Georgia. He's probably looking for a little love because it probably slacked off after he committed to Georgia publicly. Of course, Smile Munden went to Georgia yesterday, made his commitment known there. Tennessee has continued to talk to a couple other committed players out there, but I just don't see a whole lot moving on or going on with that right now. I do think you'll see maybe another name or two pop up in the next week and a half, 2 weeks, but I just don't think you're going to see the movement, Jimmy, overall that everybody thought we would see because this thing is not opened back up. And I think kids are like, hey, I don't have a whole lot of other options because I'm not hearing from a lot of schools. I'm going to stick with the commitment I've made to the school I'm at. I'm going to go ahead and sign in December because there's no advantage for me to wait until February because I can't go see a school and they can't come see me.
Brent, I also wonder if Tennessee does not finish, if they finish as the odds makers suggest, is that going to have a negative effect on some of these commitments? Are they going to start looking elsewhere?
Well, I think right now they're all holding strong, and they've been holding strong. I think that's a credit to the relationships that they have developed, the staff has developed with them. Again, I think one of the things is how many of them are having other schools call them at this point? I mean, it almost feels like everybody's locked in. You know, everybody's got 23 commitments, you know, somewhere in that range. How many schools are holding spots for transfers, Jimmy? Yeah. I think that's another element to this, whereas you're sitting there going, normally if you only had 19 commitments, you're like, oh, God, we got to fill out our class. We got to have numbers. Maybe you're sitting there saying, you know what, I'll take 4 or 5 transfers. You know, this kid's called me. This kid sent a text to the coach that was recruiting him and said, hey, you know, I'm interested in maybe making a move in January when the one-time transfer deal goes through. Now, we don't know how the SEC is going to view the one-time transfer rule. Okay, there's no given that they're just going to come in and say, hey, you can bounce within each conference, you know, from one conference school to the other when, you know, in the one-time transfer policy. So that's another sidebar. I mean, coaches have some really interesting decisions to make, and they don't have all the information in front of them to be able to make some of those decisions. In other words, Jimmy, if you're an SEC school, do you want to hold 3 or 4 scholarships? Are there 3 or 4 guys that you want? Okay, maybe they're within the conference, but maybe you can't get them. They got to come in and set out. Well, how valuable are they then? Or do you have 3 or 4 guys outside of the SEC that you want? So you're definitely going to hold for them. I think there's some interesting decisions to be made by coaches.
To follow up on that, we heard Jeremy Pruitt say that all the seniors are welcome to come back. Do you think either Tennessee or the SEC is going to put a limit on how many football scholarships you can have?
Jimmy, it's my understanding what they're going to say is a senior, they're going to stay at the 85 number, but a returning senior does not count against that 85. Okay?
Okay.
So you are already planning your 85 based on the senior class you were losing, right? So that's how many you knew you could sign. So you're going to stay in that world, but those seniors, if they choose to come back, won't count against your 85. That's what's been indicated to me. I've not seen that formally voted on, formally announced. That's what's been presented to me as what's likely to happen. They've got to have some kind of plan in place, right? I mean, you can't sit here and just say, you know, we'll figure it out later, because you have to make decisions sooner rather than later. Now, how many seniors want to come back? I don't know. How many seniors do the coaches really want to come back? I don't know. you know, all of those things will factor in. But I think in terms of balancing the numbers, I think that the NCAA may say, hey, seniors now don't count against you next year if they're a second-year senior, if that makes sense.
But it would still count financially toward you if you keep So that's another issue.
Yeah, that's a whole different issue than the 85 number. The finances of it are certainly, you know, significant. And look, we're not just talking about, you know, 85 in football. There's other sports involved here too. So from a financial standpoint, yeah, it's expensive. That's why we had Barry Alvarez saying back last spring, hey, I'm not going to honor those because we can't afford it. Now, what's he going to do with his football players? I don't know. We'll see. But, you know, a little bit different. Just a lot of unknowns still at this point, even though the early signing day is not far off.
656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. And, Brent, it seems like they keep continuing to kick that can down the road, because while the seniors don't count against you, you do have now. It's almost like streaming a video where you pause it, and, of course, time goes on as you're watching the game on a DVR. You've got this bit of time that's just, you're playing with it right there. At some point, it's got to come to roost. It's going to cost somebody a spot, either a veteran player or an incoming freshman, if they don't come up with some sort of transition, because right now it's just kind of like a big balloon payment of possibility in terms of what the roster could look like. But at some point, they have to be specific in how they address it, right?
Or you're going to have a lot of guys, you know, losing spots, getting cut, you know, or coaches not renewing scholarships. I mean, it's almost like they're putting everything on a credit card, John, and
exactly.
You got to pay for it at a later date. How is everybody going to pay for it from the standpoint of finances, but also more importantly, from the standpoint of managing the numbers of 85? Do they make an exception here and there? I mean, how do they work this going forward? Is going to be, you know, interesting for some of those guys, because this year is not a big deal. I get it. You say, you know, if you're gonna do this rule, hey, all the seniors come back, it doesn't bother you. The problem is next year, you know, when a guy who has got that extra year of eligibility and says, hey, I'm staying. Do you want that guy to stay? Do you tell him, hey, you got to go? I mean, there'll be some much harder decisions made next year on your roster than there will be made this year.
Let's go back to the phones and check in with Doug. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Doug.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hey, afternoon. How are you?
I'm tolerable.
All right.
I have a question for Brett, but I was just talking to Sam there about this year, and sometimes I feel like I went to sleep in February and just woke up this morning. Is it really true that Kentucky beat Tennessee 34-7 in Knoxville?
No.
Is it really true that Florida State is a 35-point underdog at home?
Yes.
Is it really true that Indiana's undefeated? Is it really true that Penn State is 0-4? And finally, Michigan's 1-3 and lost at home to Wisconsin by, 49-11? Is that really true?
Welcome to 2020.
Yeah.
Boy, I know it. It's up, isn't it? So,
hey, Doug,
I wanted to ask. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, I saw something that was pretty interesting there. Preseason AP top 10 teams that started 0-4 in history.
Uh-huh.
Penn State this year, Pittsburgh in 84, Illinois in 54, Arizona State in 76. Those are the only four that have started 0-4 and when they were an AP top 10 preseason team. And Penn State joins that list.
I know, it's just unbelievable. But, Brent, I figure, and you probably say this too, the most important recruit is Salter, the quarterback from Texas. Do you think he's solid?
Yeah, I do. I think he's solid. And because he's – I think he's very, very important, because obviously Tennessee's got to have good quarterback play. Because he's so solid, maybe one of the most important recruits is, can Tennessee get Tyon Evans back in the boat, the running back? Because I think Tennessee needs needs a difference maker running back. And that's no offense to Eric Gray or Todd Chandler or even Jabari Small, you know, those guys. I think they need a heavier running back who can be a difference maker guy. But when you look at the biggest issue with this offense and this team, it's the quarterback play. And so certainly they need some competition in there for Harrison Bailey with Salter in the spring. And we'll see what happens there, because I don't know what J.T. Shrout's going to do. And I don't know what Brian Maurer's going to do. I mean, J.T. Shrout didn't even travel to Arkansas. We'll see if they take him on the trip to Auburn this week. Mm-hmm. And then I don't think Brian Maurer gives you a whole lot of confidence moving forward based on what we saw out of him at Arkansas in the third quarter.
Right. So what part of Texas is Salter from?
No, I don't remember my geography right now.
See, I don't know. There's just so many hills down there. You know, he could take a 1 or 2 hour drive to look at, even though there's no official business.
I think Cedar Hills, but I'm going to check that.
Yeah, he's been solid. He's been solid all the way through. I mean, he's been very vocal about how solid with Tennessee he is in any interview he's done, but also on Twitter. It's not just that a Tennessee outlet has called and interviewed him and he said all the right things. He's been very vocal on Twitter about, you know, being solid to Tennessee after losses and things like that. So I don't think there's any issue there, and I expect him to be at Tennessee in January. And, you know, who knows, maybe we get back to normal and have actual spring practice and give those guys a chance to compete and see what happens.
Well, I hope so. Great show, guys. See ya.
Doug, always appreciate it. And, Jimmy, you are correct. It is Cedar Hill.
Yes, and what I'm not sure about is what that's next. I don't know if that's near, like, Dallas or Houston. I was trying to look at that. But, he's very important.
I want to say Houston, Jimmy, is what I want to say, but I may be wrong on that. It's what I want to say.
Okay. Yeah, I believe you're right. Because, of course, it's southwest of downtown Dallas. It's about 60 miles southwest of downtown Dallas.
Okay, there you go.
If you have a question or comment.
Down below Duncanville.
Yeah, that's exactly right. 656-9900, 656-9900, *990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. Brent, we are now less than a week away from when Tennessee plays its first basketball game. What was it like to hear from guys like Springer and Keon Johnson as they took some questions within the last week? And what are you most looking forward to with this year's team with Rick Barnes?
I want to see how Coach Barnes, you know, man, has the, what kind of rotation he has with the depth that he has. How does he manage that? Assuming everyone can, you know, stay on track to play and you don't have contact tracing and you don't have any virus issues or like that. How does he manage minutes with guys? Who's first off the bench? What's the rotation look like? Who plays the best, you know, with what pairing? How aggressive does he want to be defensively? Does he want to extend the game, extend the floor and play a little more pressure defense than he has in the past in terms of being more aggressive because he's got the depth to do that? And then I think, you know, how does this team shoot from the perimeter? We hear Josiah James is better. We'll see how much better, how much improved he is. Muscovy, it showed that he could shoot the ball last year. You know, Springer and Johnson are scorers. I don't know if they're great outside shooters. So what does this team look like scoring the ball from the perimeter is another question. Another thing I'm anxious to see. I think they've shot the ball pretty well in the preseason based on everybody you've spoken with. But how well do they score, out on the perimeter when we get into, you know, get into the season and get into those bigger games against better opponents?
Yeah, it's amazing that we will get to see. Granted, it took special circumstances. The Vol Classic make a return, but they open against Charlotte next Wednesday. And so the day before Thanksgiving, we will have a game under the belt of the Tennessee Volunteers. And, Brent, as we were talking basketball last segment, as long as you've been following basketball in the NCAA tournament, what do you think in perhaps having every team gather in Indianapolis?
Well, I think it's an interesting concept, and I think it, you know, look, we all know, and Rick Barnes said this from his first Zoom call that he had with the media, they have to find a way to play the NCAA tournament. If there's basketball this season, they have to find a way to play the NCAA tournament because of the finances. And if that means you put everything in a single place, then go for it. My question would be, do they move conference tournaments? Do they eliminate conference tournaments? Because to get into that, I think you have to get to Indianapolis, those 68 teams or whatever it is, you almost want to bubble them for 2 weeks prior to them getting to Indianapolis. Because you don't want to get to Indianapolis and then all of a sudden you got issues breaking out while everybody's, you know, in this kind of bubble there. So do they adjust the conference tournament a little bit like they do with the women's sport where they have that week off in between? Do they make some kind of adjustment there to help sort of quarantine it before you get up there? I think that's an interesting sidebar to, you know, trying to play everything in one city, not in one particular building, but in one city. But whatever to do to play the tournament, I think, is where the NCAA is at right now.
Brent, we heard Mike Schwartz, associate head coach for Tennessee, talking about how Jaden Springer and Keon Johnson have already bought into the defensive end. So many other good defensive players, Eve Pons, et cetera. This has a chance to be, I think, a really, really good defensive basketball team, don't you think?
There'll be a lot of disappointment at Tennessee if they're not, Jimmy. With a rim protector like you have in Pons. And also Pons has the ability to guard on the perimeter. He can step out and defend out there as well. His versatility as a defender is very good. All the talk about Keon Johnson and Jaden Springer, there's been more talk about those guys' ability to play defense than it has been their offensive skills, which is crazy to think about with highly acclaimed freshmen who generally just garner, you know, scoring discussions and that kind of thing like that. So, yeah, I think there'll be great disappointment at Tennessee if this is not a good defensive basketball team. I think the one key for them, Jimmy, is can they not overhelp? Too many times last year, because they gave up dribble penetration, I thought that the help guys got sucked inside in the paint and they gave up some open looks at the three-point line. With Pons playing the rim protector and with better on-ball defense, maybe that help defense won't get sucked into the paint. They probably should not give up as many open looks from the three-point line as they gave up a year ago.
I thought there was something else Schwartz said that was pretty interesting. In addition to have 4 and 5 players who have point guard skills, he said that he believes they've got 3 or 4 players that can create their own shot, which is something that they have not had that many in the past.
Yeah, and look, in this game, that's what you've got to do. I mean, you can scheme up the world, but at some point in time, particularly with the shot clock going down, you got to be able to make a play. Who's going to be able to make that play? We saw 2 years ago when Tennessee made their run and they were number one in the country, it was actually Lamonte Turner who was the guy down the stretch in the NCAA tournament who was making a play for them. That, you know, whether he's getting high off the glass for a tip-in or he's making a layup, he was kind of the guy who created offense for them. So can they do that from a variety of different plays, places on the floor? Schwartz seems to think that they can. That will change the dynamics of this offense a great deal because then, Jimmy, you're running less sets and you're playing a little more freedom, open space, motion type stuff that'll have a little bit more of an NBA feel to it, which I think Rick Barnes likes if he can get that going.
I also think it's going to be interesting to see the impact of Victor Bailey and EJ Anasicki. You're not hearing a whole lot about those two, but I think those two could be very valuable pieces to this puzzle.
I think particularly Anasicki, they've got to have rebounding help. That's what he's here to do. Scoring is almost a luxury with him. You need him to rebound. You still wonder how this team handles size if they play against a really big front line. You know, is there a challenge or some difficulty there? But Anasicki's got to come in and rebound the basketball for Tennessee. And if he comes in and does what he's supposed to do that way, then I think he's going to make a big impact on this team because they need some rebounding help.
Brent, among the many things that folks will find right now at VolQuest.com, you've got the stock report for the Volunteers heading into the game against Auburn. If you would, just give us one upward trend and perhaps one that needs to reverse its trend heading into the matchup with the Tigers.
Well, I went with Brent Somaglia because I think he's fixed his problem. Austin went with Harrison Bailey because of how he gave everybody a little glimpse of some promise in the fourth quarter. I think in terms of what needs help, both of us we're kind of in the same spot. It's halftime in the third quarter. They got to figure out whatever the problem is there and get that fixed because that's just been absolutely detrimental to them during this four-game losing streak. So whatever's going on at halftime, they got to get that straightened out and be better in the third quarter if they're going to have a chance to pull off an upset at Auburn this week.
Yeah, how difficult has that been to figure out for the fact, as Jimmy was pointing out, this is a team that's played well enough to lead at Georgia, shut out Arkansas for the first two quarters, and then it's almost like a switch has been flipped in the wrong direction the moment you come out after half.
Well, throw in the Kentucky game. They gave up 75 yards and 3 points defensively. Yeah, I don't have any idea. It doesn't make any sense, particularly in light of the fact that they were a really good team in the second half, to start the second half a year ago. They really won the last 4 minutes of the first half and the first 4 minutes of second half all year. Their adjustments were fantastic, but it has not clicked for this team for whatever reason, starting with that Georgia halftime fall apart, second half, third quarter, you know, collapse, whatever you want to call it, and it's just not gotten any better. I don't have an answer for it. I don't think Tennessee has an answer for it. We'll see if they can find one Saturday night.
So what else will folks find going on at VolQuest right now?
Well, we got our regular coverage to get you ready for Tennessee and the Tigers. We'll have the War Room tomorrow. We've got our mailbag podcast up right now. Rob's got his matchup piece up. We've got our roundtable discussion up previewing the game. And then tomorrow we will have the 10 things I think. We'll do our predictions. I'll do our cheat sheet on Saturday, a little recruiting coverage sprinkled in there as well. Plenty of stuff going on, plenty of stuff to talk about. Some really interesting decisions to be made moving forward on the recruiting front, particularly in light of some of the stuff that could be coming down the pike that we talked about. Just a good bit going on right now, and some discussion about a lot of things happening. It's been a pretty busy last couple of weeks on Tennessee's campus, John.
It sure has. Brent, we always appreciate it. Thank you so much. Have a safe trip to Auburn, and we look forward to catching up with you sometime next week, because I think you'll be busy like we will be on Thursday.
Yes, sir. We'll figure something out. But everybody have a great Thanksgiving, that's for sure. And have a great weekend.
You as well. Thank you. Brent Hubbs of VolQuest.com. His appearance brought to you by Diversified Enclosures and Screen.